The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
What is Title IX? Well, it's short for Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972, a major piece of civil rights legislation that was passed 50 years ago this month. And its most monumental part, the part that cleared the way for equity for women and girl athletes at federally funded schools, are these 37 words. 37 words that changed the game forever.
No person
in the United States shall,
on the basis of sex,
be excluded from participation in,
be denied the benefits of,
or be subjected to discrimination
under any education program
or activity,
receiving federal financial assistance. I turned dust to
diamonds. Now here is just a remarkable snapshot of the impact that Title IX has had. Before Title IX was established in 1972, one out of every 27 girls in America played sports. 50 years later, that number is now two out of every five. So if you think about it, it used to be something like 4%, and now it is something like 40%. That is just remarkable, and we are celebrating it all day long. And with that, we welcome you back into our studio on what is a very busy morning for us. We are live above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. You know the faces. It's Graziano, it's PK, it's Canty. We got them and a whole lot more. And let's get it rolling here for hour number two, because we have a lot on the menu. We are getting up with a Brooklyn bombshell, Woj, off the top with the very latest on the decision that will reshape the entire NBA. And by the way, it'll happen in the next 6 days. Meanwhile, one of Gronk's former teammates is with us, and he will tell you that he's really done. So does that mean no Super Bowl for Tampa Tom? Plus, how about the decision? Lamar, Burrow, head-to-head, who you got? What if your answer is neither? We're talking about it all. You're watching Get Up on ESPN. It begins, PK Subban, with the game of the night. Game 4, Stanley Cup Final, Avalanche, Lightning, Tampa Bay, desperately needing a win at home to even up the series. Halfway through the second period, we're tied at 1, and Victor Hedman, all by himself, unties it.
Yeah, Victor Hedman, he was up for the Norris Trophy, didn't win it this year, but that doesn't mean that he can't make Norris Trophy plays, and he made a big one here to help his team out, get back in the game to go ahead a little bit.
Yeah, the Lightning had a 2-1 lead. They had their chance, but they couldn't hold it. Darren Helm from the blue line, and then there's a scrum in front, and they score.
Big play by Darren Helm here, depth player, but stepping up, making a big play for his team. Colorado had to get to Vasilevsky, and they found a way to get a few by him.
And so that tied up at 2. They would head to overtime, and here's how it ends. Just over 8 minutes left. It's Kadri sweeping across the crease. For a moment there, no one seems to know the puck is in the net, including Vasilevsky, but indeed it is. So the Avalanche win it by a score of 3-2. They take the huge 3-1 lead in this Stanley Cup final, and there was much rejoicing. But wait, there was also much controversy. PK, too many men on the ice.
Yeah, if this is a conversation between me and Stephen A., I'd say no goal, no goal, but this is a good goal. I don't think the extra man really plays a role in the overtime goal here. Not much of an influence. Obviously, McKinnon was still on the ice when this puck gets stretched past up, but the defense had a chance to make a play. I think this is a good goal, and Colorado's got a 3-1 commanding lead going back home.
John Cooper didn't see it that way. Listen.
No, he didn't.
This one's going to sting much more than others just because I think it was taken on. It was potentially, I don't know. It's hard for me. This is going to be hard for me to speak. I'm going to have to speak. I'll speak with you tomorrow. You're going to see what I mean when you see the winning goal. And my heart breaks for the players because we probably still should be playing.
And I'm not quite sure, you know, what he's thinking, why it shouldn't have counted. I mean, that kind of confuses me a little bit. You know, the puck hit the back of the net. End of story.
Well, it isn't really the end of the story, actually. The story includes the fact that there was clearly an extra skater on the ice. If you're wondering, is that reviewable? The answer is no. There were four on-ice officials. None of them saw it, and thus it was not called, and thus the game-winning goal stands. There's nothing that could be done about it after the fact.
Listen, if the extra player on the ice would have had more of an impact on this play, I think that maybe it would have been called. But at this point, you want to let the teams decide what happens in the game, and that's exactly what happened. I think this happens almost every shift where a guy's not completely off the ice. This is a play where the guy's completely out of the play. I don't see it really impacting the goal much. Both defensemen are back. It's not like they changed and a guy got him behind the defense. This is just playing hockey. That's a hockey play. And you got to give credit to Colorado and Kadri for getting this thing done. But there are six guys still on the ice. We can nitpick. But like I said, you could review this a million times if you want and a million other plays. There's always going to be that gray area of when a guy gets on. This is part of the game. That's hockey.
All right, so that's good perspective on it there from an active player, that this is a play that you might see take place multiple times in a game, one way or another. It happens at the worst possible time.
Yeah,
as it turns out, the game-winning play in a game that might very well wrap up the cup.
It is. This definitely puts Tampa in a tough spot, but I think this is just part of the game. You know, this is a tough pill to swallow for them. But listen, you got to park this. Mm-hmm. You know, the series isn't over. You got to go on the road and win one game, bring it back home, and see what happens. If there's any team that can come back, it's Tampa. But Colorado, to beat them three times in a row, is definitely a tough feat.
All right, the defending champs are on the ropes. PK, awesome. Meanwhile, next order of business, NBA. The draft is tonight, but next week is the deadline for that man. Kyrie Irving has until June 29th. That's next Wednesday, to decide whether or not he will opt out of the final year of his contract with the Nets and become a free agent. His running mate, Kevin Durant, is under contract through 2026. That pair has been inextricably linked since forming their partnership in 2019 through the very few ups and the very many downs that they've had all along that time. And Chris Canty with great perspective on this all morning long, but here's our NBA brain trust, Wendy and Woj, with us here. Woj, I'll start with you. You had the big story yesterday about the latest on Kyrie, the relationship with KD, the significance of that from a leverage standpoint. For those who've not yet had a chance to see it, take us through where we stand.
Well, Greeny, the Nets are really trying to kind of ride two rails here. One, trying to stay disciplined from a contractual standpoint with Kyrie Irving moving forward on a new deal. They want a short deal. I think they would like to have some protections in there, perhaps around things such as games played, that would, you know, put the onus on Kyrie Irving to be on the court, something that he hasn't been enough for Brooklyn the last couple years. Of course, he wants a long-term max deal. That's not available to him in Brooklyn or anywhere else in the league right now. But by the same token, Brooklyn also needs to be, you know, very aware, and they are, about Kevin Durant and the possibility that if Kyrie Irving walked and decided to take far less money to go somewhere else to play next season, you know, that may impact how Kevin Durant feels about being in Brooklyn. But as you said, Greeny, he's signed through 2026. And listen, they need to find a way here to get a deal done with Kyrie Irving, keep Kevin Durant committed, and then try to shore up the rest of their roster. They need Patty Mills to opt in to his deal. But there's no question, listen, Brooklyn on some level is clearly willing to let Kyrie Irving walk, because right now they're not giving him everything he would like in negotiations. But it would be fairly unprecedented for a player of his stature to walk away from this much money. It's a negotiation, it's a dance, and you can expect it's going to play into next week.
Let's be clear about just what we're talking about here, Wendy. I mean, and you said in our first hour, he's an unpredictable person. And normally you would never expect anyone to walk away from the amount of money we're talking about here with Kyrie. You just kind of never know. But put in perspective for the fans here, what are we talking about in terms of money that he might be walking away from?
Yeah, so if he picks up his player option by next week, he's guaranteed $36 million for next year. And if he does that, it almost certainly means he's going to be a Brooklyn Net. If everything was in a good position and everything was good with the Nets and they were ready to sign him to a long-term deal, he would opt out of that contract he would sign a brand new contract starting at his actual max, which is $42 million. That right now does not seem to be an option for the Nets. So when it comes to leveraging his position, he really needs to convince the Nets that he has another option. And in the last 6 or 7 days, because some teams learned of this situation about a week ago, I have not been able to identify any teams that are making significant moves to clear cap space or to prepare a trade offer for the Nets. Now, the draft is tonight. We could see things change after the way the teams play out. But the classic team we're looking at here is the Brooklyn Nets or the New York Knicks. They're the team that needs a point guard that has assets that could make a trade. And they are on the hunt for a point guard. And they are looking to do things. But that point guard is not Kyrie Irving right now. They're looking at possibly trading up in this draft to get Jaden Ivey out of Purdue or to clear cap space to chase Jalen Brunson in free agency next week. If Kyrie Irving's on their priority list, he's not at the top. And so that even, you know, makes it harder to project what the Nets are going to have to do here and what leverage might actually force them to move.
Fascinating. There's the traditional leverage, which is, does someone else want him? And then, as Woj, sort of the thrust of the story from yesterday, KD presents sort of his own individual leverage. And Chris Canty, I would love to get your perspective on that side of this, the KD of it all. You host the national talk show. You're based here in New York. You understand the dynamics of the situation as well as anybody. How about, if you're Kevin Durant right now, what are you thinking as all this is going?
Well, if you're Kevin Durant, you're thinking, I've backed Kyrie at every turn since we arrived in Brooklyn in the last 3 years. You're talking about a player in Kai that's missed over 120 games, a guy that decided that he wasn't going to get vaccinated when all the other Nets players did. Even when it knew it could potentially cost you James Harden, he still didn't, and Kevin Durant supported him. Now, I was under the assumption, Greeny, a couple of months ago when Sean Marks issued the ultimatum, that Kevin Durant supported the organization taking that stance with Kyrie. But depending on what ends up happening over the course of the next week, we're going to get more insight as to how Kevin Durant feels about what the Brooklyn Nets have laid out for Kyrie Irving the last several weeks. So that's the part that becomes the most fascinating to me. But if KD and Kyrie can't find a way to make it work in Brooklyn, to me, that is an admission of failure on Kevin Durant's part in terms of trying to build a championship contender, knowing that he left a better basketball situation in Golden State to start something with one of his good friends, Kyrie Irving.
Look at that number on the screen. Since they've been together 3 years, they've played 58 games. I mean, when you just look at it that way, you sort of know it in your head, but when you look at it, it is just an astonishing number over the course of three seasons. In fairness, that first year, Durant didn't play at all. He was coming back from an Achilles. But even so, Woj, put a finishing touch on this here for us. What should the fans be thinking about as we look ahead to whatever might happen tonight, and then most importantly, next Wednesday?
Well, listen, Greeny, I think certainly from the Brooklyn perspective, knowing where they stand with Kevin Durant is going to be a big part of the leverage that they hold over Kyrie Irving. And listen, remember last season, you know, he lost about $17 million because of his decision to not get vaccinated, is losing a significant shoe deal that I think in part has been because of his inavailability around the Nets the last 2 years. And so I think for Brooklyn, listen, they want to keep Kevin Durant committed, focused on being a part of this team. You talk to other agents and players around the league in other seasons, you know, Kevin Durant was out this time of year, you know, helping to talk to potential free agents. You know, they'll tell you he hasn't done that so far this year. And so I think for the Nets, I think there's a deal to be made here with Kyrie Irving. I think ultimately you take him at his word that he's wanted to stay here. Nobody wants to give up that much money. I think there's a way for them to get to it in the next week and bring this group back next season.
Well, this thing gets interestinger and interestinger as we go. Awesome work. Woj's story yesterday, fascinating if you haven't seen it. All right, meantime, oh, by the way, the draft is tonight. So Jay Billis is going to jump in here next. He'll tell you if there is another KD or another Ja Morant to be had at the top of this year's class. Plus, if you think for sure that Gronk is coming back, think again. One of his closest teammates and friends has other ideas. You will hear from Ninko on that. But first, we'll hear from Sneaky Hembo and Graziano on this. Here's the question. Who has scored the most touchdowns in the NFL since 2010, which is the year that Gronk entered the league? Sneaky Hembo, here we go. The answer's next. Get up on ESPN.
Pat.
passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
All right, here we go. Since the year Rob Gronkowski came into the league, which is 2010, which player in the NFL has scored the most touchdowns?
So, I mean, right, like, Gronk would be the obvious answer, right? Like, that's where you're trying to – sneaky Hembo, right? So he's trying to lead you somewhere, and it's tied to that. But I thought I was going to guess him anyway, because I think that might be the answer. But then he said to me – Hembo said to me in the break, it's rushing, receiving, and returning touchdowns right. altogether. So I'm switching my guess to Antonio Brown.
Oh, no. You talked yourself out of it. It is Gronk. Oh, Gronk is right. He played the Jedi mind trick on you. That is so disappointing. Antonio Brown is second.
That's why he's sneaky.
With 88, but that is a sneaky move. You know what? Once again, I don't like the move by Hembo there. Just throw in some stuff. Don't talk to him during breaks before you do that because I root for you.
It's really a matter of trusting him. That's the problem.
The reason this is a topic is because earlier this week, Rob Gronkowski announced that he's retiring once again. He played 11 seasons with his longtime quarterback, Tom Brady. 9 of those are New England, 2 of them in Tampa. He's won 4 championships. And, you know, over the course of the last couple of days, just about everyone that I've had on here has suggested, including his agent who texted it to Shefty, that there's a really good chance he comes back. But none of those people know him the way Rob Ninkovich knows him. And, Ninko, you believe, and you told us in our first hour, that he really is retired for good. We'll have to wait and see. But if he is, I really liked what you were telling us this morning on our call about the place that he will occupy in your mind if indeed we have seen the last of him.
Yeah, and Rob's the last of a dying breed when it comes to the old school tight end position. He can block, number one. I mean, he's a great run-blocking tight end. And you look at Tampa Bay and the success that they had in winning a Super Bowl. Hembo, thanks for the stats here. Of their 20 rushing touchdowns the year that they won a Super Bowl, Gronk was on the field for 19 of those touchdowns. So his ability to block in the running game is so vital because he's on the field. So he stays on the field in run blocking situations, and then in second and third down, he's running routes that safeties and corners can't cover. So it's really, really hard in 2022 to find a tight end that can block. I mean, you have Kittle, obviously, but a tight end that can stay on the field, that can block in the running game, and then can also run every route on the route tree. And not only can he do that, he can go up and get a ball when he's covered. When he is covered, he can go and catch a ball over somebody. So he really is like the last true tight end that you would see as a big body guy that can go up and get the ball in the red zone, but also can run block better than anybody else. So it's kind of sad because the way that the game is developing now and the young kids now, they don't want to block. They want to go catch passes. They want to get paid like receivers. They don't want to be true tight ends. So you're seeing less and less and less of the guys that are big body tight ends that we used to see 10 years ago, and we're seeing the smaller, more athletic tight ends that we're seeing right now today. So it's last of a dying breed. Rob Gronkowski is the last time we're going to see a guy like that.
I think it's a great point. It really is. The players who are coming in that position right now, brilliantly talented Kyle Pitts, they're just bigger receivers, yep, is generally what they are. So, having said that, well, I really wanted to get that in the show today because I thought it was fascinating. Having said that, if he doesn't come back, Canty, how does that impact Tampa Bay's chances of winning this year's Super Bowl?
Well, it's huge because Tampa uses the tight end as a key piece of their offense. I mean, there was no team in the National Football League last year that targeted tight ends in the end zone more than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And if you look at Gronkowski's touchdown catches last year, 4 of the 6 came in the red zone. So when you look at the actual roster for Tampa, outside of Cameron Brate, there's not a lot of experience. They drafted 2 tight ends in the middle rounds, and Cameron Brate himself is more of a U tight end, a guy that's off the ball, a guy that they split out sometimes line up in the backfield. So they don't have that guy that can be an inline blocker in the run game, but also a key part of the passing game.
How about it, Graz?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Obviously, I do think there's some wiggle room here with regard to the offense, right? Byron Leftwich and Bruce Arians were together in Arizona. They didn't really use the tight end that much out. They didn't have a guy like that, right? So, but I do think it affects them in terms of his ability to dominate in the run game. They're going to have to mix and match at that position a lot more. You can't just plug in Gronk and have him be the reliable guy that he always was. It's a puzzle they have to figure out. Fortunately for them, they've had time to prepare. He hasn't been there all offseason, and they knew this was a possibility, so they could make the adjustment.
All right, we'll leave it there, but it's just an interesting way of looking at it. We'll see what impact it has. But a reminder, tonight, NBA draft. You see the countdown there, 10 and a half hours and change until we get the action tonight, and you'll be watching Jay Billis analyzing this year's class, which is headlined by the consensus top 3 players, Auburn's Jabari Smith Jr., Gonzaga's Chet Holmgren, Duke's Paolo Banchero, our mock then has Purdue's Jaden Ivey and Iowa's Keegan Murray rounding out the top 5. Let me bring Billis into the conversation here. And Billis, you know, the fans like to hear who these players sort of remind us of, who they could turn into. So, Jay, who does Jabari Smith remind us of?
The closest comparison is probably as a shooter, Kevin Durant. He's not the same type of player as Durant, but Jabari Smith is 6'10". He's long-armed, and he's a fabulous jump shooter. Hit 79 threes this year, shot 42% from three. He can make them off the catch, the dribble, fadeaways, turnaround jumpers. He's got a Dirk move, you name it. He can really shoot it, and he's an excellent defender that can guard multiple positions.
And how about the kid from Gonzaga, Chet Holmgren?
You know, there's nobody really like him, Greeny. He's truly unique, but I would say he's a little bit like Kristaps Porzingis with his ability to shoot the ball from the perimeter. He's a 40% three-point shooter, but he's also a baby Giannis with his ability to handle it in transition, to get downhill, and to finish around the basket. I mean, he's got game-changing ability. Chet Holmgren, if he reaches his potential, he's a big-time talent.
I like that. And then there's Jaden Ivey, who everyone around New York is talking about this week. How about him?
Incredible explosive speed, especially in the open court and in transition. He's got an amazing first step. He reminds me with that speed and explosiveness, a little bit of Ja Morant, but he's got the length of a Dwayne Wade. He's got a long wingspan. He's tall. He can elevate. Pretty good out of pick and rolls. He's got to improve his reads there, and I think he can improve as a defender. But there's no doubt that he's a prototypical NBA wing with that explosiveness and shot creation.
So interesting thing happened overnight. The odds shifted on who was going to be the number one pick in the draft. Jabari Smith was the favorite yesterday. Now suddenly Paolo Banchero is. Quickly, Jay, if you had to bet on one player in this draft to elevate a franchise, who would it be?
Well, I think the top 4, you know, we mentioned Jaden Ivey, I would throw in there along with Holmgren, Smith, and Banchero. I think those are the game changers. But if Holmgren reaches his potential, he has the highest ceiling and the most potential for greatness in the modern NBA. And I don't make that baby Giannis comparison lightly. I think we can see even more from Holmgren. He's a magnificent ball handler. He can pass it. He's a big-time shot blocker. The only thing that gives you any pause in sort of my old-school Neanderthal basketball brain is his body doesn't look like an NBA body of old. But I don't think that matters anymore. He is tough and competitive. And anytime he hits the deck, he gets right back up. He's never had any injury problems. I like Smith as the number one pick, but this is a year where there's not necessarily a wrong answer at number one. And you could make a good case for any of Holmgren, Smith, or Banchero. I just lean towards Smith because of his tremendous shooting ability and defensive versatility in the NBA.
Strangely, I've just been told that now Caesars has taken the odds for the number one pick off the board for tonight. So anything could happen, and Jay Billis will be right there in the middle of all the action. Thank you, Jay, as always. Again, the draft is tonight. Barclays in Brooklyn. The Magic have the first pick. OKC and Houston are next. It's 8 Eastern. You'll see it on ABC, ESPN. You'll hear it on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Coverage starts 7:30 Eastern time. All right, coming up, Wendy is coming back. Tell you the one thing Kyrie could do this summer that would send the Nets into a complete panic. And I, for one, am hoping he does. That's next. Get up on ESPN.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HE travel at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use the code 5HE travel to save 20%.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
We're back on Get Up and back to the NBA. Let's play a little game of what if. Hey, Chinne Agumuke, what if the Lakers core three doesn't change? What do they become?
If the Lakers core three doesn't change, that means everything else around them must change, meaning we all know who their big three is. We've got Russ, we've got AD, we've got LeBron, but their supporting cast has to be better. And what is the reality of this Lakers team? They were 21st, I believe, in defense, 22nd in offense. They have about half of the roster to fill up. Expect major changes from them.
Well, and what if LeBron turns out to be one of them? Wendy, what if LeBron doesn't sign an extension in August?
This is something that no one is talking about, but is obviously a big thing that could impact next season. If he doesn't extend, he plays out the year with the Lakers and tries to make the best of it, and we start counting the Cleveland Cavaliers cap space.
Oh, okay, sign me up for that. Next, Chinne, what if Kyrie opts out next Wednesday from Brooklyn?
It might sound a little wild, but don't panic, because at the end of the day, the prize is Kevin Durant, the guy who averaged 37-6. I would want him to stay. And also, KD, you've been there. You've done that. You've left the team before. You've won two championships with Golden State. Do you want to leave again? I don't think you panic if Kyrie leaves, because Kevin Durant is good enough to attract another star to whatever city he's at. Fingers crossed, it remains Brooklyn.
All right. Is the expectation that Kyrie stays in Brooklyn? I asked that question to Woj earlier this morning. Here's what he said.
I think people do expect that Kyrie Irving returns just based on the economics of it and how big of a financial hit Kyrie Irving would have to take to leave. But, you know, he probably also surprised a lot of people with his willingness to lose $17 million last year in salary because he wouldn't get vaccinated. So there is precedent for him for leaving money on the table, but this is a lot of money.
Okay, so that's what he said. Now, in the meantime, here's what I liked. Wendy and I have these great conversations before we come on the air every day because neither of us has anything better to do. And Wendy, you gave me a little scenario that could take place next week in the event that Kyrie opts out of his situation in Brooklyn. Tell everybody who hasn't heard it what it is.
So the Nets obviously feel like they have some leverage here because there's no team that can really offer Kyrie a comparable salary. But the one thing that you can't account for is, would Kyrie really want to go play for the Lakers and play again with LeBron James and chase a championship there, even if it's for a lot less money? even the Nets don't know for sure if he'd be really willing to do that. So if he really wanted to create leverage beyond just Kevin Durant wanting him to be there, he would opt out of his contract by next Wednesday. That would be step one. And step two is he would do something to make it imply that he was interested in truly going to the Lakers, such as being seen in Los Angeles, such as taking a meeting with the Lakers, having an Instagram post, outside Crypto.com arena, being on LeBron James' Instagram at his rooftop deck where he likes to take potential free agents. Something to ratchet up the pressure on the Nets, because as of right now, I just don't think that anybody truly 100% believes that he would take a $30 million pay cut, because that's what it would take to go to the Lakers. But it's still a glimmer because of the kind of decisions Kyrie has made in his career.
Okay, Chinay, but let's just live in that world. You're right there in L.A. Let's say next week, next Thursday, on LeBron James' Instagram, there's a picture of him and Kyrie Irving, and they're lifting up their red wine glasses, you know, and they're toasting what might be in the future. What is Chinay going to say on NBA Today?
My goodness, I'll be in L.A., so maybe I'll be the first one to spot him. But what I will say is that those are some real friends that want to take care of each other, meaning they're probably playing the game, as Wendy said, to try to get that compensation right or get the situation right. Because at the end of the day, players are here for players over teams and the leagues when it comes to finances and contracts. I'm going to help you out. The only thing I really heard, maybe because I'm a 30-year-old woman, was like, this feels like you're trying to make your significant other jealous, right? The Brooklyn Nets. All right, I'm going to hang out with my ex, and we're gonna look cute. How do you feel about that? We're on good terms. That's the vibes that I'm hearing, but these are the games that people play when it comes to contracts. So yeah, the reality is Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, Ben Simmons, their best interest is to see what that team is capable of this upcoming season. But in order to get the money, you do have to play games and maybe have a good little dinner date with your ex and be like, hey, y'all remember, like, you've got it good too. Even though things haven't been perfect, our relationship is worth saving.
I'm so in for all of this. So at the end of the day, Chinay, let's make a basketball question out of this. Does Kyrie Irving have a better chance of winning next year? Because if he went to the Lakers, they wouldn't have to give up anything to get him, right? He's going for the mid-level exception, right? Which is like $6 million or something. Does he have a better chance of winning with LeBron in L.A. or with KD in Brooklyn next year, Chinay?
Next year, I would say that Kyrie has a better chance winning with KD in Brooklyn just because there's familiarity there. They've proven that they can be a top team. When those two play together, they're one or two in the Eastern Conference standings. We all saw this past playoffs run. If you play your best basketball at the right time, which the Brooklyn Nets have not been able to do, but if they're able to get 82 games, or at least let's pray for 70 games together in the regular season, you're fresh heading to the playoffs. This is a team that adds the defensive versatility of Ben Simmons. That three should be able to be the best team in the East. Now, all the personalities and the puzzle fitting makes that a little complicated, but if there are no situations like we've seen in the past 3 years, his best chance is, you know, going with familiarity versus what we experienced with the Lakers, where they have a lot of holes to fill, a new coach, new schemes, half of the team, the roster has to be turned over. So, like, you have to look at those situations and realize, maybe I'm good where I'm at.
All right, that's fair. So, Wendy, put a final touch on this for me here. From all the people you talk to around the league, what does everyone think is the likeliest way this scenario finishes?
That he will be a Net on some sort of brokered deal where he gets more money that's guaranteed and he's protected, and that the Nets are also protected, both in a long-term, potentially short-term situation. As Chinay said, the Nets can be really good next year. I can't assume anything with Ben Simmons, but if he is able to play for them, that's a real big upgrade on their defense, which was the big thing holding them back. They also are going to get Joe Harris back. Durant is still an MVP-level player. I still think that this can work out in Brooklyn, and this is just a glorified, high-profile fight over money. But I will say this. Typically, the Lakers wouldn't want to be used like this, but they have so few ways to meaningfully improve. I could see them having to explore this KD flirtation, even if they know that it's not necessarily likely it would happen.
It's going to be fascinating to watch. The first move is Kyrie's. It has to be made by next Wednesday. Guys, thank you. Awesome. Again, we look forward to all the coverage of the draft tonight on ESPN and ABC. Meanwhile, we had controversy last night on ABC. PK Subban is here. It was overtime, Game 4, Stanley Cup Final, and this is how it ended. The Avalanche with a rush and a game-winning goal in overtime that gives them a commanding 3-1 series lead. But it's not nearly as simple as that, because PK, for the fans who were just waking up and joining us, have not seen it. There is controversy here because there was clearly an extra skater on the ice.
Yeah, and I had said this earlier. I think this happens almost every game, you know, on line changes. But when you're in the Stanley Cup Final and you're playing for potentially a Stanley Cup, these things get magnified, and it got magnified last night. Big play by Colorado to get this win. Obviously going up 3-1, going back to Colorado. They got a stranglehold on this series. Tampa Bay sees their Stanley Cup, their third Stanley Cup, dwindling right now in the wind. Tampa Bay fans are upset, and I can understand it. You see the six men on the ice, but this happens a lot in hockey. This is part of the game. I think the refs did the right thing. Let the players decide what happened, and Kadri did.
To be clear, none of the four on-ice officials saw the extra skater on the ice
they
or saw it as
it.
A penalty,
they can't review
and it is
it
not
either.
Reviewable,
yeah.
Not in the building or back at command. So the question then becomes, is it over? The Avalanche with a 3-1 lead, two of the next three, if they have to go that far, are in their own building. Do you see the Avalanche now winning the Stanley Cup?
Anything's possible. I mean, can Tampa come back? Yeah, they have the pedigree and the championship pedigree to come back. They're well coached. They have goaltending. But I don't think there's a team that's beaten Colorado three times all year, especially in a row, and definitely not in the playoffs. This team, Colorado, right now is clicking. They believe. They've battled through adversity. And you have guys like Nathan MacKinnon, Rantanen. Nathan MacKinnon, he's due for a huge game. Going back home, I expect Colorado to want to put this thing to bed. They're not going to want to let this series linger around and give the Stanley Cup champions a chance to get back in the series. So tough sledding right now for Tampa. They got to go on the road and try to win one game, bring it back home, and you never know what happens when you have the best goaltender in the world.
Quickly, just a very quick question I wanted to follow up here. When it ends with that controversy, and we've played the sound bites all morning long, the coach couldn't even speak, John Cooper, because he was... Does that have any carryover effect, positively or negatively, for a team that feels like a missed call cost us a game in a series?
Well, John Cooper's very, very smart. You know, this isn't his first rodeo. He understands he's got to galvanize his team, and this is maybe something that they can rally around. They have a tough hill to climb. Mm. They need something a little bit extra, maybe, that, you know, puts a little chip on their shoulder, gives them a reason to play a little bit harder, gives them a little bit more belief that we're not done yet. There's still hockey left to be played. We're still breathing. They haven't put us 6 feet under yet. Let's go win a game on the road, come back home, and see what happens. But if you're Colorado, this is your chance. This is your series to lose.
That game is tomorrow. The Cup will be in the building in Denver. Game 5, Stanley Cup Final. Avs up 3-1, looking to close it out and win the Cup for the first time in 21 years. Our coverage begins 8 Eastern on ABC and ESPN Plus tomorrow. Meanwhile, PK, I just wanted to see what happened in this T-ball game yesterday. We got just unbridled chaos going on here. Right? So now this kid, he hits it. There's a scrum trying to catch it. Kid's running the wrong way. And then when the guy gets up and throws it, just watch what happens here. He throws it in.
Jeez.
I'm sorry. Should I not laugh at that?
Is that a softball?
No, I don't know. I don't know what kind of ball it is.
Where were they throwing it?
I mean, he's just the kid's throwing it.
Jeez. Yikes.
I mean, they put the laughing emojis on the post, so I assume, they thought it was funny, whoever it is that put this up there. Is that the most chaotic sequence you've ever seen in the history?
Well, I hope the kid's okay.
Of course, everyone hopes the kid is okay. I think that goes without saying, that we hope the kid is okay. By the way, what you're not seeing at the end of this is that they all ran off differently.
Like, listen,
in different directions for no obvious.
I think he'll be fine. My sister dropped me on my head twice when I was, 3 years old, so I turned out okay, right? I turned out all right.
Yeah, that but depends on how you define all right. But no, so far you seem to be doing great. All right, as we continue, how about the decision? Lamar, Burrow, or other? How about those of us who choose other? We'll play Who You Got Next. Let's get up on ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Back on Get Up, talking football, and let's play a little game of put up or shut up. All right, Dan Graziano, what does Justin Herbert need to put up this season?
A playoff appearance. Look, we talked about this. He looks great. He looks the part. He's a very exciting player, but the Chargers haven't done anything in his 2 years. If they win the division, if they get themselves into the playoffs, that's a big step for him, and we can continue to get excited about his ascent.
Chris Canty, how about Tua Tagovailoa? What does he need to put up this season?
Tua needs to definitively prove he's the second best quarterback in the AFC East. Listen, the Miami Dolphins have given him no excuses. They provided him with everything he needs. They signed Terron Armstead and Connor Williams to fix the offensive line, Raheem Mostert and Chase Edmonds in the backfield. And then, oh yeah, by the way, you've got Tyreek Hill to go along with Mike Gesicki and Jaylen Waddle. Tua needs to be able to get this done. Zach Wilson and Mac Jones, relatively low bars to clear.
Ninko, how about you on Kyler Murray? What does he need to put up this season?
Better numbers from Thanksgiving on. If you look at the beginning of the season, he kills it in the beginning of the year. He does great. But then you look at the end of the year, I don't know if it's injury or he's just getting fatigued. He drops off in December. He's got to play a full 17 games.
All right, fair enough. And all of that kind of leads us back to Dan Orlovsky, who posted on Twitter his list of the top five quarterbacks, 25 or younger, in the NFL. And one of the things that got a lot of attention was that he left Kyler Murray off of the list. And you see the order he has them in there. Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence, and Mac Jones. No Kyler Murray. And that was one of the things people reacted to. And one of the things that Dan didn't do in the list, and that's the beauty of it, because it spurs any kind of conversation you want, is he didn't say whether he was talking about what they've accomplished so far, which would put Burrow and Lamar Jackson obviously in a completely different category than all the rest of them, or which one you would start a franchise with. That's the one that I think is the most interesting for young players. So I asked all of you, and you all said Joe Burrow. Why, Chris Canty? Why was your answer Burrow ahead of Lamar Jackson, who's been an MVP, Justin Herbert, who has so much talent? Why Joe Burrow?
Granted, we're talking about a guy in his first full season as a starter. Remember, his rookie year got cut short with the ACL injury. First
right.
full season as a starter, took this team to the Super Bowl. Prior to that playoff run, the Cincinnati Bengals hadn't won a playoff game since 1990. So think about the organizational failures that the Bengals have experienced over the years, and Joe Burrow has overcome all of that, including being the most sacked quarterback in the National Football League while actually leading the National Football League in completion percentage. The guy can win from the pocket, and as we always say, you got to be able to win from the well in order to have high-end success. Joe Burrow has proven that he can do that in spades. He's got the intangibles. That team plays with a lot of confidence. That's why I give him the edge over the other quarterbacks.
Right. I mean, he's magnificent. And any conversation in which you try and make an argument for someone else is going to sound like we're diminishing him. I in no way mean to do that. He's been brilliant. That said, Rob Ninkovich, I'm old enough to remember when you were sitting in this chair telling me Lamar Jackson was every bit as good as Patrick Mahomes and he was the best and how much you loved him. How did you not go Lamar Jackson on this question?
Well, Greeny, it's your world. We're just living in it. So I was only given two names. I had to choose the one that I wanted to pick for a long career in a franchise. So I went with Joe Burrow. I know you're going to go with another quarterback, but we were only given two options. But
right,
I love
but why not Lamar.
I think he's done great.
Yeah,
I'm thinking long term here. I'm thinking 10 years. You start a franchise, you think long term. Lamar, you know, he's great. He has been a NFL MVP, and he is a great football player. Nothing diminished on his skill set. But when you think of Joe Burrow and the things that he's able to bring to an organization, he's your prototypical pocket-style quarterback that can make all the throws from the quarterback pocket position. That's what you want for a franchise quarterback. Running around and scrambling, yes, that's great for one or two games a season, two seasons, but when you think 10 years plus, when you think long franchise career, there might be some diminished returns as you get older. So I'm thinking Joe Burrow for the long haul on what he can bring to your organization.
The way you started that answer, Ninko, led me to ask this question quickly. If you had been given Herbert as an option, would you have taken Herbert?
considering Joe Burrow just went to a Super Bowl and Herbert hasn't really gotten anywhere close, I'm going with Joe Burrow.
Okay, fair enough. Graziano, how about it?
Yeah, I'm starting a franchise. That's the question, right? I need somebody who can elevate in a difficult time, because then you're starting a franchise, it's going to be tough, and who can overcome adversity. Sacked 9 times in a playoff game, still managed to win it. We have seen him accomplish things. I believe that Lamar Jackson can accomplish these kinds of things. I believe that Justin Herbert is good enough to be able, but we've seen Burrow do it. And that's why I think he has the edge over these other outstanding candidates who I love watching. I just feel like his accomplishments so far show proof that he can do the things you need from the quarterback you're starting your franchise
with. I can't argue with that. However, it does bring me back to something that I've said many times. Like most geniuses, I will not be fully appreciated until long after this time. And I'm telling you right now, Justin Herbert is the answer to this question. And 5 years from now, we will all see that.
We'll see.
He is as good. There's not a quarterback in the entire sport, inclusive of everyone, that I think has more tools. Is him himself? More tools than he does. I don't mean the weapons around him. I mean the ability to do it, both running and throwing. He's Josh Allen.
Josh Allen.
He's on that level, big fella. I'm telling you right now, we're overlooking Justin Herbert. Okay, one more thing I want to get in today. Rory McIlroy, 4-time major champion, has offered some of the harshest criticism yet of some of the PGA Tour players like Brooks Koepka, who have defected to the rival LIV Golf Invitational Series. Here's what Rory and PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan said yesterday.
Am I surprised? Yes, because of what he said previously. You know, I think that's why I'm surprised at a lot of these guys, because they say one thing and then they do another. And I don't understand that, and I don't know if that's for legal reasons or if they can't. I have no idea, but it's pretty duplicitous on their part to say one thing and then do another thing.
Let me be clear. I am not naive. If this is an arms race, and if the only weapons here are dollar bills, the PGA Tour can't compete. The PGA Tour, an American institution, can't compete with a foreign monarchy that is spending billions of dollars in an attempt to buy the game of golf.
It's pretty passionate words there from Jay Monahan. Quick take from you on this, Chris Canty, is I know this is something that's near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, there's a lot of charged rhetoric from Jay Monahan and the PGA Tour talking about the LIV Tour and how it's backed by the Saudi government. Let me just say this. We live in a global economy, and everybody understands that. We're all interconnected. Athletes want to maximize their earning potential because they have such a finite period of time to make this money. And ultimately, everybody's got a number, Greeny. Money talks. My only question to Jay Monahan and the PGA Tour is, why did it take the threat of the LIV Tour for you to adapt your business model to get these golfers to realize closer to their market value and their contributions to the game? Because make no mistake about it, it's the individual golfers that are growing the game. This is not a team sport. There is no allegiance to a franchise in a certain league. It's about the individual golfers and watching the best in the world be able to play. My question is, why is the LIV Tour so much different than the other situations where PGA golfers have played in international tours for years? The Sunshine Tour, the Asian Tour, the European Tour. I don't think it makes it a win for the PGA Tour to have an adversarial relationship with the guys that have defected to the
LIV
Tour.
Well, the difference is that there's unlimited funds. I mean, basically, they can throw as much money at this as they want to. And what we are seeing in front of us, I'll just leave it at this quick thought. What we are seeing in front of us is a structural change to a major sport unlike any we've seen in generations. The magnitude of this, it will never be the same. First Take is coming up top of the hour here on ESPN. They're asking if Kyrie would be better off on the Nets or on the Lakers next season. It's Stephen A., it's Molly, it's Brian Windhorst, it's Monica McNutt, top of the hour here on ESPN. All right, we have another College World Series elimination game today with a place in the finals against Oklahoma on the line for the winner. It's Ole Miss against Arkansas. It's 4 Eastern on ESPN2 and on the ESPN app. And that is all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for getting up with us. We will be back and better than ever same time tomorrow. But the fun continues. First Take starts now.